It is Monday, August 22nd, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Sarah Williams in Washington. Coming up, Turkish officials say a child is likely responsible for the fatal weekend bombing in southern Turkey. Republican presidential candidate Donald Trump says he's not flip-flopping on deporting undocumented immigrants.
He's not flip-flopping in the sense that he is still holding on to the idea of deporting the 11 million undocumented immigrants living in the U.S.
And a former plastic engineer creates packaging to replace the substance. It's all ahead. Turkey's president, Recep Tayyip Erdogan, Sunday said a young person, perhaps only 12 years of age, was the suicide bomber that killed more than 50 people and wounded dozens at a wedding ceremony Saturday in southern Turkey. He said it was likely the work of the Islamic State, although there was no initial claim of responsibility. This latest attack comes just 5 weeks after a failed military coup that the Turkish government blamed on supporters of exiled Muslim cleric Fethullah Gulen. Regional analyst Ian Lustig of the University of Pennsylvania tells International Edition's Victor Beatty, if this was an IS-inspired attack, it may be in retaliation for gains made on the battlefield by Kurdish fighters in Syria.
Since there have been setbacks for ISIS in Syria as a result of Kurdish fighters gaining territory from ISIS, Kurdish forces that are supported by the United States and have had the ability to move across the Turkish border, it's hard to believe they have direct support from Erdogan since he's conducting a war against the Kurds with his other hand. But ISIS appears to think that the Turks could stop the Kurds from fighting them in Syria, and they're not. So I think ISIS is attacking Turkey to try to get Turkey to crush the Kurds and also to warn Turkey not to become involved in the Syrian civil war in a way that would threaten ISIS. It's happening against the background of the Erdogan government conducting a purge of its own movement. Its movement, an Islamic movement that has taken power and ruled Turkey more or less democratically, but in recent years less and less democratically, came to power in part because of an alliance with this movement that is called the Gulen movement. Gulen is a preacher who now lives in self-imposed exile in the United States. He was originally a strong ally of Erdogan, and his whole movement, which includes economic and business and social ties and networks of people in the educational system, in the military, all of these groups are groups that Erdogan decided he no longer wanted to be in a position to rival him. What Erdogan has done is he's told the Turks something very hard to understand, that ISIS, the Kurds, and the Gulenists are all the same. They're enemies of Turkey.
Any idea how it's going to play out?
No, not in any specific way. I do think that ISIS is on the downslide. They are suffering now. It reverses. But that doesn't mean that they can't lash out in extremely destructive ways, as they showed with this last attack.
Are you expecting more bombings like what occurred on the...
Unfortunately, I am expecting more violence, and I think more violence from more quarters, including those who will sympathize with the tens of thousands of Turkish civil servants and military officers who are now being imprisoned. Erdogan released over 30,000 prisoners just to make room for all those he's been purging from the upper ranks of Turkish civil society. This is very hard to predict where this is going to end.
That's regional analyst Ian Lustig of the University of Pennsylvania. Time now to check out what's buzzing online. Our social media reporter G. Abby Lee is here in the studio with What's Trending. Hi, G.
Hi, Sarah.
Well, it looks like swimmer Ryan Lochte woke up to a not-so-great news this morning.
Absolutely. I'd be upset, too, if I woke up to find out that I lost a $50,000 sponsorship from Speedo. The UK-based swimwear manufacturer announced a decision on both Twitter and Facebook, and part of the announcement reads like this. We cannot condone behavior that is counter to the values this brand has long stood for. Speedo will donate $50,000 from Lochte's feed to a children's charity in Brazil. Now, the overriding sentiment online seems to be for the decision, and some people are arguing, urging the American fashion house Ralph Lauren to follow suit.
Will I see any news on the political front?
There always is and will be until the election is over. GOP presidential nominee Donald Trump sent out two tweets targeting the left-leaning station MSNBC. He tweeted, "Tried watching low-rated @morning_Joe this morning. Unwatchable. At Morning Mika is off the wall, a neurotic, and not very bright miss." He is referring to one of the hosts for the show, Mika Brzezinski, and then went on to suggest a romantic relationship between the two hosts. He argued, "Someday when things calm down, I'll tell the real story of @JoeNBC and his very insecure longtime girlfriend @MorningMika, two clowns." The other host, Joe Scarborough, replied, "Thanks for watching. Morning Joe is enjoying its best ratings ever, thanks to obsessed fans like you. Glad," with a smiley face at the end.
Well, anything else trending?
Another political story, but this time about the Clinton campaign. The New York Post reported, one of the top aides to Clinton has worked at a quote-unquote radical Muslim journal for years, and the publication is called the Journal of Muslim Minority Affairs, where Huba Abedin worked as the assistant editor, and her mother is the editor-in-chief. The New York Post argued the publication opposed women's rights and blamed the U.S. for 9/11. Back to you.
Pretty controversial there. Well, thank you for the wrap-up, G. Tweet us your comments and questions at @VOA_IE. You can also find me and G on Twitter. I'm @VOA Williams, and G is @GAbbyLee. Here are some of the top stories trending. Afghan and Indian leaders vow to deepen cooperation in fighting terrorism. The U.S. and South Korea begin annual military drills despite threats from Pyongyang. U.S. Secretary of State John Kerry is in Kenya for talks on keeping the peace in South Sudan. And sources say mislabeled pills containing an opioid were found at the late singer Prince's estate. Expanded coverage of these stories and more are on the VOAnews.com website. This is International Edition.
This is Science in a Minute.
In November 2015, scientists discovered a Venus-like planet that's only 39 light-years away, called Gliese 1132b. The planet is thought to have an atmosphere despite having a blistering temperature of more than 230 degrees Celsius, since it orbits its red dwarf star from a distance of only 2.25 million kilometers. A new study suggests that the exoplanet's atmosphere is thick and dense and may contain a little oxygen too. Since the planet is so relatively close to its sun, scientists say it's being bombarded with ultraviolet light. This UV light can break down water molecules, separating them into hydrogen and oxygen. Since hydrogen is so light, it can easily escape into space, leaving some of the oxygen to stay behind. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
This is International Edition on the Voice of America. I'm Sarah Williams. Coming up, Louisiana tries to recover from recent floods. Republican presidential candidate Donald Trump now says he's holding firm to his views to deport 11 million undocumented immigrants living in the United States. That's one of his main campaign planks in the November election against Democrat Hillary Clinton. I'm joined now by VOA writer Ken Brademeyer. Trump had a number of meetings over the past weekend with he spoke about African Americans and also Hispanics, because according to the polls, he is not very popular with those two groups.
That's certainly correct. He badly trails Hillary Clinton. And so he's making an effort to try to gain some foothold in those particular ethnic communities, because if he were to lose them as badly as he is, he has little chance of winning the election, frankly. He has to somehow gain enough support to at least match what Mitt Romney did 4 years ago, and hopefully from a Trump standpoint, to do even better. Hillary Clinton maintains a wide, wide edge among both African-Americans and Hispanics.
Well, during the primary campaign, Trump emphasized a plan he has about building a wall on the border between the United States and Mexico, and you know, cracking down on illegal immigrants. But it sounds like in the last day or so, he's somewhat perhaps going to moderate that view.
Well, it's, I suppose, possible. This morning, however, he said, "I'm not flip-flopping." He's not flip-flopping in the sense that he is still holding on to the idea of deporting the 11 million undocumented immigrants living in the U.S. Now, whether he actually changes the policy in the coming days, that's certainly who knows. But he's holding firm. And the reason this issue came up is that his new campaign manager, Kellyanne Conway, when asked about the same issue just a day ago, said, "to be determined." So Trump was left to try to explain, well, what is to be determined? And he said, "I'm not flip-flopping." So we'll have to see.
Yeah, it seems that Ms. Conway is, you know, she's publicly coming forward with this. I think it seems like she's trying to indicate that since she assumed command of the campaign, that, you know, there's somewhat of a change or sort of a more muted response by Mr. Trump.
She certainly is trying to make her chosen candidate. She did work for somebody else in the Republican primaries, but she's now with Trump. And she, in her mission, obviously, is to make him as acceptable to as many millions of voters as she can. And Trump trails in the polls. He has to do better and make himself more acceptable to the masses, not just the people who handed him the Republican nomination.
Thanks very much, Ken. That's VOA's Ken Brademeyer. Parts of the Baton Rouge, Louisiana area are getting thunderstorms with heavy rain as people continue cleaning out homes to recover from recent catastrophic flooding. About 3,200 people remain in shelters. International Edition's Lori London talked to Mike Steele, spokesman for the Governor's Office of Homeland Security and Preparedness, and asked how many people have been impacted by last week's flooding.
The registration count's already up to 102,000. So technically, if that was all done properly, that's one person per household. Mm. So it's hard for us to determine exactly how many people are in each household. But, you know, there's quite a few.
It sounds pretty catastrophic from what we're hearing as far as people literally being displaced.
It is pretty devastating. I was a television reporter when Katrina and Rita hit. And I thought that was about as bad as it could get. This looks very similar in some areas to Katrina. And so, you know, that's kind of the same comments you hear from a lot of people as they go around and look at some of the areas. I personally live in Livingston Parish, which was one of the hardest hit areas. And kind of being in the Denham Springs area and some of the areas in Livingston Parish reminded me a lot of being in some of the places right outside of New Orleans after Katrina.
What does it look like?
Just total, you know, devastation. There's piles of debris everywhere as people try to, you know, get everything out of their homes to help with the mold fight and to get everything cleaned out properly. And then, you know, a lot of the major shopping centers in Denham Springs are completely shut down. There's a large home improvement store right off the interstate, and they're talking about running operations out of the parking lot just to help people with things like sheetrock and lumber and different things they may need, because they estimate it could be 6 or 8 weeks before that store gets reopened. But there's a couple of other newer, you know, brand new major shopping centers that are completely shut down right now.
Any idea how long it will take to recover from something like this?
It's going to be months. And you know, it's hard to tell exactly. You still have standing water in some areas right now. And luckily, those are some areas that, you know, with a smaller population, but, you know, it's still just as devastating to those people. But, you know, we're definitely talking about a long recovery process here. So, you know, we're trying to make sure we keep everybody focused. One of the things we were fortunate to have was that literally as the rain was still falling, FEMA already had some key people on the ground with us. So they were able to go out and take some early, like, you know, they were getting a look at some of these areas that were obviously devastated by the by these floods. And so we were able to get the presidential declaration very early. So that was kind of key to us. And even though it was only four parishes to begin with, anybody in the state that was impacted by this could start their registration process.
I understand the forecast is calling for more rain. How concerned is your agency about that?
Well, we've had rain almost every afternoon since the flooding stopped. So that definitely adds a few more challenges onto what we're doing. This is a time of year when you see a lot of pop-up thunderstorms, you know, start to hit the state. We have the threat of tropical weather that we're still, you know, keeping an eye on. And as a matter of fact, the governor's already made all of the key agencies start having meetings on, okay, what if we're dealing with this and we have to start dealing with the threat of a tropical system? Like, how are we going to address it? So those conversations have already started. And, you know, there's no guarantee that you couldn't have another very large event. We have thunderstorms here can cause, you know, severe damage at times. We pretty much have to stay ready for anything. And then there's a number of industrial sites, you know, all over the state, especially South Louisiana. And so, you know, you could always have some type of new problem, you know, compound the current problem.
That's Mike Steele of the Louisiana Governor's Office. He was speaking with International Edition's Lori London. This is VOA.
The U.S. presidential election takes place on November 8, 2016. VOA provides extensive coverage of this important political event. Who are the candidates and what are the issues that will determine who the next president will be? Tune in around the clock for coverage of the U.S. presidential election right here on VOA.
Hi, I'm Nikki Strong. You love music? How about Blake Shelton and Carrie Underwood? Or Merle Haggard and Loretta Lynn? Experience the best in country music on Country Hits USA. I bring you some country rock, outlaw, a little hillbilly, contemporary, and more, with a dash of entertainment news, too. So join me for Country Hits USA on VOA 1, the voice of America.
This is International Edition. The average American throws away approximately 185 pounds of plastic every year. Much of it ends up in the ocean, according to the marine research group Algalita. Almost half is tossed away after just one use. Industrial engineer Paul Tasner spent most of his professional career making blister packs, the plastic casing for consumer products. Then one day, already on his way to becoming environmentally conscious, he had an epiphany that changed his life. Jan Sluzer has his story.
Paul Tasner's conversion came at home one day when he was 64.
My wife came back from a big box retailer with a pair of these industrial strength shears for opening packages. That's what it said on the package, you know, for opening those hard to open plastic blister packages. The shears were called Open It. And the ludicrous, hysterical part of this scenario was that the shears were packed in a blister pack.
Over his 35-year-long career, Tasner designed and helped manufacture blister packs. Laid off because of the recession, but far from ready to retire, the industrial engineer decided to start his own company. He would create biodegradable packaging that would offer the same quality as its plastic counterparts, but could be composted into a soil supplement rather than ending up in trash dumps for thousands of years. Architect Elena Oliveri, who had a background in engineering and design, was looking for a challenge. She decided to take a chance and join Tasner's startup because a family member's death from cancer had made a strong impact.
There are links of plastic related to cancer. So even doing something that can reduce that number of people that are you know, harmed by the plastic and reducing the amount of plastic in the world, which is becoming absolutely too big to deal with. We're doing something that made me feel like, well, you know, even if we can make a small difference, it's better than nothing.
The company, launched in August 2011, was named Pulpworks. Combining their strengths, Tasner and Oliveri created a patent-pending product called Cartipak to replace blister packs. Tasner, now 71, says it's important to point out that the technology is not new.
Egg cartons are made using our technology, but we take that technology and create what we think are a lot more attractive and sexier packaging than an egg carton. And by using different materials, egg cartons are made from recycled newspapers. We use newspapers, corrugated, but we also use many different agricultural fibers that give a whole different look and color and feel to them. You wouldn't recognize it as molded pulp.
Tasner set up deals with half a dozen of his old contacts who use agricultural fibers to create different textures and colors. Now his company has six partners in five countries on different continents who use only local materials.
Our partners in China have access to bamboo and sugarcane. Our partner in Canada has access to wheat straw, and on and on and on. Any kind of fibrous material, cellulosic material, is fair game for molding into a package. So by having a wide variety of geography, you have a wide variety of raw materials.
Tasner says he knows that Pulpworks is making an impact because potential clients who wouldn't return calls 5 years ago are now calling, and the company is at the forefront of green packaging.
Every package that we produce replaces a piece of plastic that is not going to a landfill. What could be better than that, except to do it a billion times over, really, and that's our goal.
Pulpworks is focused on expanding its use of local agricultural fibers to more countries on other continents, including Africa, and is looking to attract more clients eager to be environmentally responsible. For VOA News, I'm Jan Sluzer in San Francisco.
And that's our show. I'm Sarah Williams. Thanks so much for joining us.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
The skies of North America today provide the backdrop for celebrating a century of conservation of one of Earth's most treasured animals, migratory birds. On August 16, 1916, the United States and Great Britain, on behalf of Canada, signed the first migratory bird treaty to protect these shared natural resources. The treaty was the first international agreement forged to protect wild birds and among the first to protect any wildlife species. The Migratory Bird Treaty is the foundation for significant achievements in bird conservation that followed, with both nations enacting statutes to implement its provisions. In 1917, the Canadian Parliament passed the Migratory Bird Convention Act. In 1918, the U.S. Congress followed suit, passing the Migratory Bird Treaty Act. In subsequent years, the United States signed similar treaties with Mexico, Japan, and Russia. Our two countries' conservation efforts have yielded real results, especially for waterfowl populations, said Catherine McKenna, Canadian Minister of Environment and Climate Change. I am proud of the work we have done, but as the recent release of the State of North America's Birds Report has shown, we have a challenging road ahead. I know we are up to the task, and I look forward to building on our successes together to recover other migratory bird species. It's hard to imagine the North American continent without egrets, ducks, hawks, or songbirds. But at the turn of the 20th century, that's the way things were looking, said Dan Ash, director of the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, which has responsibility for conserving and managing migratory birds and their habitats. This treaty marked a turning point in the fate of our shared bird life, and it continues to this day to unite efforts in the United States and Canada to protect birds across our international boundaries.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.